from SLB Radio in Pittsburgh, Youth Express, the nation's first 24/7 radio station devoted to youth writing, music, and conversation.
I don't know why some people look down on people who either give up on college or never go in the first place.
There are people that just hate you because of your race or ethnicity, but we are definitely making progress.
She's hungry for everything, the life within, trying to find her way around again. Looking and searching is what she's doing.
So I followed my brother down to the riverbank, and we donned our skates. While Lev hurried, I tarried. While Lev trudged through the slush, I caught a flake on my tongue.
My parents are from Bhutan. They migrated to Nepal, and I born there, and I moved here in the US. So it's a long journey to get here.
Today, a reflection on a poem by William Blake and a documentary about the rising impact of opioid abuse on unborn children. But first, in honor of Black History Month, students from Holy Family Academy discuss reasons for young people to learn African American history.
Why is it that, like, very little Black people know about their history? I find that weird that, like, nobody really knows where they came from or, like, the stories about themselves.
That is a good question. People don't know much about themselves, and it comes down to not wanting to know much about yourself, you know. History can be dark, it can be sad, it can be depressing, and no one really ideally wants to go through that depressing era, that depressing stage, especially when it comes to African Americans and the things that we've been through, you know, throughout our past. It's hard to relive it. It's hard to see that or know that our ancestors have been through it, you know, especially in the time area that we are now where the world is so diverse and there's so many different races and cultures everywhere, you know. It would be hard for an African-American to watch a movie or read something on slavery and then go sit in a class with a white teacher.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it just plays a part in people not wanting to because it's just a dark past.
But I also feel like even if you want to or if you don't want to, it should be like automatically, I wouldn't say forced upon you, but like it should be brought to your attention at least, because I know, you know, from personal experience, I don't really know much about myself or like much about where I came from. There's also not many people that's trying to help me and motivate me to get to know myself and my background.
I don't think that's truly, you know, your fault. You know, in schools, we're taught a lot of what I like to call false history and not really history that our history.
It's what they want you to know.
You know. It's what they want you to know, you know.
Yeah.
Books surrounded around information and sometimes false facts, you know. So it's not your fault, you know. But if you want to know about yourself and your past, I think it's more of a, you have to dive into it yourself. You have to take that initiative and say, you know, I'm going to learn about myself. I'm going to figure some information about me. Because I don't think anyone's really going to give you that information. No one's going to tell you that information.
I definitely agree. But I feel like from me, like trying to learn for myself, I can't really like explain other people's either. I can't really explain how other Black males that are my age, like I can't really express that to them. And I don't know how to get them to be interested in themselves either, actually. Yeah, I feel like that's difficult as, you know, a young person, because I want to be able to speak about this type of stuff in a setting such as this, or like even at school.
In public.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely understand, because at times, you know, being a young African American and when you want to talk about your culture, or you want to talk about, you know, the race and learn about yourself, you can be made fun of or looked at as always pulling the race card or always talking about race, always the woke one, when you're truly just interested in the topic, you know. So I definitely understand.
You got anything to add?
Yeah, you got anything to add, Destiny?
I mean, to be honest, if you wanted to find out history, you can find it out, but it's just like you really gotta want to do it, because they're not making it easy for us to find out anything that we want. All they put in the books about is slavery, Martin Luther King, we don't have a lot of black leaders in our history books. We always learn about the presidents. I can't name all the presidents. That's not good. Like,
yeah, we definitely have our select group of African-American representatives when it comes to the history books, you know, and our select topics we talk about when it comes to learning about African-American history with slavery, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Rosa Parks.
Yeah.
That's normally exactly what Black History Month consists of, you know. And how long can you really go with learning the same topics?
I'm like in high school, still didn't learn nothing else besides those things, basically review every year, history class. Yeah. Oh, Martin Luther King. Oh, slavery. Like, we never dig into it. Yeah. I mean, my mom makes me do it, so I know a lot about it, but
I feel like my first and, like, last time ever learning about something other than those topics was in eighth grade at the last middle school I was at, St. Benedict the Moore School. And my teacher, Mr. Roberts, we had a black history class. We didn't have any, like, social study class or, like, any, like, regular. We just had black history class. So he taught us a lot about Marcus Garvey and a lot of other black leaders and black individuals that helped mold the future as we are today. And I never learned anything else about any other thing other than that.
And if we do hear about black history, it's about how we were hurt and not how we prevail. It's like they just want to see us as slavery. Oh, we're hurt. Oh, then they don't do anything to make us feel good about our history for us to want to talk about it.
Yeah, definitely right. You know, I know a lot of times in media, African Americans can be portrayed as dark and, you know, we don't really have those prevailing moments through history, and they don't really show our prevailing moments through history.
Yeah.
I think that's also, you know, somewhat of a tactic to keep young African-American males and women from not wanting to know their history, you know, from enjoying their past, from wanting to be something that they're not, you know.
I agree.
When it comes to terms like the more dark you are, the ugly, you know, and dividing ourselves into two different groups, from light skin to dark skin to, you know, long hair, short hair, when at the end of the day, all it is labels, and we're dividing ourselves when we're already in a division of our race anyway, you know, instead of standing together to prevail, we're separating. And I think that's definitely one of the things that media and people want the African-American race to do, because I've always believed with numbers come more strength, you know.
Yeah.
And as more people read up and educate themselves on their race, and more people band together, and we'll just only get stronger. We'll have more knowledge, more ideas, more innovators, more leaders.
I feel the same way. And to add on to what you said, like, in numbers, you know, their strength, I feel like also there has to be heart. Like, it doesn't, it's not like it doesn't matter how many people are with you on a subject, but I feel like
you have to want to do it.
Yeah. As long as you have the passion and the drive for it, you can go through with it.
This conversation originally aired as part of Streaming Justice, a 5-hour teen-hosted talk show that aired on Martin Luther King Day. Hear more at neighborhoodvoices.org. Now, here's Jordan, a senior from the Ellis School, reflecting on The Little Black Boy, a poem by William Blake.
My name is Jordan Washington. I am 18 years old and I attend the Ellis School. And the piece that I chose to write about is titled The Little Black Boy by William Blake. And we were instructed by my English teacher to write about a poem that we thought was meaningful. I chose to write about this because I think some of the messages that it holds are still current today. In the novel, Songs of Innocence and of Experience by William Blake, he makes it apparent that he believes all people should be treated as equals. In the poem, The Little Black Boy, Blake examines what life is like for a young black child who has been taught by society to not value his own blackness. In this short vignette, the confusion behind his process of thinking is also being tainted by his innocence. In the beginning of the poem, it is immediately made clear that the boy is dealing with a blind sense of self-hatred. He states, "My mother bore me in the southern wild, and I am black, but oh, my soul is white." This particular phrase stood out to me the most because it was something that I could identify with. This type of mentality is still very prominent in the Black community today. I myself, when I was younger, believed that I did not belong in the body that I was given because people told me that I talked like I was white. I even have cousins who are much younger than me believing that their skin is bad and white skin is good. To a child that is young, impressionable, and innocent, it is very easy for society to plague their minds with negative views on life because they do not know any better. Much like the boy in this story, he sees a duality between the body and soul, and he puts one on a higher pedestal, which is his body. He values his complexion more than his mental makeup, and he goes through his life trying to make amends for his blackness as if it is a bad thing. By the end of the story, the boy makes it clear that the only way he is going to feel accepted by society is if he is being subservient to whites. He says, "Then I'll stand and stroke his silver hair and be like him, and he will then love me." The sort of internalized racism and self-hatred has been plaguing people in the Black community for hundreds of years. From the beginning of time, a hierarchy was established where we put how each other looks on a higher pedestal than valuing the complexity of how we think. I believe that Blake closed this poem with a problem instead of posing a solution because he wanted the reader to figure out how to solve this issue. I believe that he believes that people of all races should be able to coexist with one another without valuing how good of a person you are by the color of your skin. He wants us to see and appreciate as well as embrace the different ways that we all look, and he wants us to not have preconceived notions of how we view one another just because they don't look like us. Recognize our differences, respect them, and learn to put ourselves forth in the ways that we think, not look. Blake's poem is still so important today because he recognizes and understands that society has put value into one another by the way that one another looks. He wants us to all be treated as equals and accept all of our differences. Well, I know for me it's been a little bit different. I have two other siblings who were both older than me, and they went to public school and I went to private school. And we had the same dad but different mothers. So my mom always raised me not in, you know, speaking one way, like a certain race doesn't talk a certain way. It's just speaking correctly. And so I would just, you know, just talk differently than them. And basically they thought that I was acting white, or they just thought that because I used a different vernacular than they did, that I wasn't being black. But really I was just speaking how my mother taught me was the correct way to speak. And so that was just something that I kind of had trouble with. Just like when I was younger, just feeling like I wasn't black enough for black people, and then figuring out myself what's important to me and not really caring what other people think about as much. Sometimes people just are upset at something that they don't quite understand.
On our final segment, youth philanthropy interns from the Community Foundation of Westmoreland County present a documentary on the effects of opioids on unborn children. Here are Julia, Noah, and Abigail with their feature.
According to the National Institute on Drug Abuse, every 25 minutes a baby is born suffering from opioid withdrawal. Neonatal abstinence syndrome, more commonly referred to as NAS, occurs when a baby is exposed to substances during pregnancy, causing problems that affect the development of the child. Controversy arises when discussing the diagnosis of babies as well as what steps to take after a baby is born. This crisis is often overlooked when discussing the drug epidemic.
The Protecting Our Infant Act of 2015 creates awareness and identifies approaches to help care for babies and mothers. We spoke with Tim Phillips from the Westmoreland County Drug Overdose Task Force to get his thoughts on NAS awareness.
I know that they're increasing, unfortunately. I wonder if we're just identifying it better. Perhaps they were being born and we weren't really aware of it previously. Now I think just with a lot more awareness of the topic, I think people are becoming more acutely in tune with the necessity to treat not only the moms, but the babies and the families as well.
Many cases of NAS still go undiagnosed due to inadequate scaling methods or lack thereof, late onset of symptoms, and incomplete history of mother's substance abuse. The National Institute of Health states that only 36.6% of special care baby units recorded using NAS scales at all. There are many different scales that range in accuracy and depth for diagnosing NAS. Most of the scales are based off of observable symptoms and do not focus on the administration of drugs and the reliability of observers, the kind of substance, as well as how much of a substance affects the timeline and the severity of NAS. For example, chronic use of heroin may delay the onset of NAS symptoms.
However, Don Hennessy of Faith Forward describes the diagnosis process in Pennsylvania, which seems to be above many others.
I think Pennsylvania is doing pretty good. Our state has really upped it. What's more than hospital actually requires a drug test for all women going into labor now. And that didn't happen in the past. Not every state does that. If a woman tests positive, then we know that baby's going to have some type of drug within the body. The awareness that has been brought the past year, I think that we really do see the symptoms. We now know what to look for.
Neonatal abstinence syndrome affects the neurological and digestive systems and automatic mechanisms such as swallowing or blinking. Some symptoms include irritability, sleep disturbances, seizures, poor weight gain, vomiting, diarrhea, and dehydration. Babies with NAS show increased sweating, yawning, and sneezing. All these symptoms have been reported from numerous studies.
Cost-effective and comprehensive treatment strategies are few and far between, but programs are emerging to address this rising concern.
The Pregnancy Recovery Center at McGee Women's Hospital combats the issue of NAS unlike any other. As stated on their website, the PRC, the first and only in the region, provides office-based drug replacement treatment, behavioral health counseling, social services, and prenatal care to pregnant and postpartum women with opioid use disorder. The program provides medicine-assisted treatment to help prevent withdrawal during pregnancy, minimizes fetal exposure to illicit substances, and engages the mother as a leader in her recovery.
Another program that's helping with NAS is Angel Arms with Faith Forward.
The long-term goal is to have a residential program where if mom needs to go away to rehab, we will take care of their children during that time. We would also be able to monitor the children. Are they developing accurately, cognitively, physically? These babies are also still withdrawing. They can withdraw up to 2 years. Angel's Arms will take these children in, taking away a barrier for mom to get help.
The four-tier program offers a variety of services, including a safe environment for infants while their mothers seek help, a crisis program, counseling, and aftercare residential support.
According to Tim Phillips, we need to
help support the babies.
NAS is a growing problem that needs more awareness and support. To learn more about Faith Forward, visit their website at www.faithforwardpa.com.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Youth Express. Youth Express is made possible with support from the Henry L. Hillman Foundation, the Pittsburgh Penguins Foundation, and the 33 Foundation, and was produced by SLB Radio Productions. Learn more at youthexpress.org.